Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
It's over. The Magic season is over, and we're here to talk about it today. Welcome into Sports Daily, everybody. It is a Friday. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester with you for now. Jad Chambers producing. It's going to be a wide cast of characters on this Friday. We've got Adam Hadwin, Jessica Hadwin, coming in bottom of the hour to talk to us about a charity event they have. We'll talk to Adam about his PGA Tour. Now, Wichitans. So we'll have that. We'll have a little football. We'll have a lot of football for you today. We'll make our picks, talk college football weekend, talk the NFL football weekend. We'll bring in Paul Savage, TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner for our picks in the second hour. Right now, though, that IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays with the new IHOP House Faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. You can also get in touch with us on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, and of course, 12 News Connected. Royals fans, if you want to vent today, we'll give you that opportunity. You can also vent through voice message through the Odyssey app. If you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, always a great way to take us with you wherever you are. There's a little microphone on there. You can record a message, send it. Jad gets those, and we can play those out over the air. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Friday. I know we've got a really busy show today, a lot of different features to get to on the program. Of course, I know we're going to lead with the Royals, talk about the game last night, talk about what the future might hold for Kansas City. But I'm excited to get into the weekend, excited to be here today, and looking forward to jumping right into it.
It's a bummer. It's a bummer. I loved everything about last night's game except the outcome, right? That felt like playoff baseball. You don't typically get benches clearing in playoff baseball, which makes it even better. I had no issue with any of that, by the way. That was Isbell almost doing what he almost never does, getting that home run. God, in any other ballpark, right? It's just like, oh, man. It was high drama. You had Gerrit Cole looking like Gerrit Cole. I thought a couple of times they were going to get it done, and they don't, and the season's over. What a ride. I always say how much I love postseason baseball, but the agony of the exit of postseason baseball is pretty brutal. Pretty brutal, especially when you invest as much as you did in a team like we did with the Royals this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's really easy to get caught up in the outcome last night and to think about, man, what could have been, and just the way that this team had galvanized and rallied around each other all season long. When it was a roller coaster year up and down, and the highs were really high and the lows were really low, and think about, man, they were just a couple of steps away from another World Series. And so that it's really easy to get into the what if type scenario and thinking and mentality and mindset after a game like last night and after a series like what the Royals had. But look, that's not where I'm at this morning. I mean, I thought about that for a little bit. I let myself get into that mindset for just a brief period of time. And now I'm really excited. I'm really pumped about what the future holds for this Royals team.
And that's what we'll talk about that here as we make our way through it. We'll do that in our second segment. But I just, the only thing where you could maybe think about the what if is the out call at second in game one. You know, that's the only one that sort of lingers with you. But, you know, the Yankees are a really good team. I thought the Royals' game plan for them was really good. They largely suppressed that offense, which is impressive. But the bats that sort of failed them down the stretch kind of failed them in the postseason. They never did get it going offensively. And that's okay. They didn't have a lot there that was, you know, they had a stretch where they were scoring runs, but it was always like, well, maybe this is a good offensive team, you know? So that's the place to attack in the offseason. Again, we'll talk about that in just a little bit, but it was a great year. I think you feel good. It re-energizes the fan base, and it was a fulfilling series, even though everyone hates the Yankees. You had the drama of Jazz Chisholm, who was talking all series long, and it was a really fun playoff series. I'm with Paul Savage, who begs for these to be seven game series. When you get to this point, this would have been a really fun seven game series.
I don't know if it would have been. I mean, as far as like, yeah, the entertainment value, as far as like the benches clearing and, you know, all of that, I think the Yankees, you know, had it even been a 7-game series, probably would have come out on Saturday and won the game. I mean, they probably would have won the series 4-1 with the way that the Royals had been playing. And that's not a knock on Kansas City. It's just the reality. Like, let's be real about the situation. The pitching for New York was phenomenal all series long. The Royals' bats weren't really getting anything done. That's been an ongoing issue for the last month plus for Kansas City. It's just, it is what it is. So sure, for an entertainment value, for the fact that you had Jazz Chisholm talking and that drama, you had Mikel Garcia and the slide in last night, the benches clearing, all of that, sure, it would have made for high drama. But as far as baseball, I mean, let's be real. The Yankees were the better team in this series. They just were. That's okay. That's fine.
But they were razor thin. I mean, the margins were razor thin in that series. Like, it's not like the Royals got pushed around. You had the out call at second in game one. Everything else was within a couple of runs.
The pitching pushed them around. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. When they were down 2-0 last night, my first thought was, man, that could easily just have been 10-0. You know, it just seemed as insurmountable as a 10-0 deficit for Kansas City.
You know when the last time the Royals won a game at home was?
Sometime in September.
September 8th.
Yeah.
That's the other part that sticks with you. They have not been able to win games at the K down the stretch. And it bled into the postseason. I think it's a 9-game losing streak at home.
Like, let's not sit here and think that, like, the Royals really had, like, this significant chance to come back and win the series. Like, even had it gone to 7 games, even if it was a 7-game series, they would have been down 3-1. They would have needed to win 3 games in a row against the Yankees. That's unlikely, right?
It would have been unlikely, but I still would have liked to see it. I still would have liked Reagan's to make it 3-2 and then, you know, all those things, but it's okay. It's okay. Like, it wasn't, the Royals were not like totally overrun, and trust me, I've seen series against the Yankees over the years where teams were that. The Royals weren't that, and I think that's the optimism today. The other reality is, like, it's disappointing and it stings still today. I mean, there's no doubt, and it's going to for a little while. But I think the focus is how much of this carries over. And for me, when I think about the Royals, I think about the misery of the last 9 years before this year, like. Can we just feel like that's not coming, right? Is this sustainable? And I think with Bobby Witt Jr., the short answer is absolutely it is, but it's more than that. It's Salvador Perez finding a power surge late in his career and being able to extend his career probably longer than people thought. It's Vinny Pasquantino, before the injury, finding it this year and becoming the player the Royals hoped he would become and the best version of himself, like Freddie Freeman light. With Vinny Pasquantino. So, you know, there are all of these things that you can look at and be hopeful about, but the front office and the ownership is going to have to back that up. I hope that what this season did was give them the ammunition and the confidence to do that. They're still trying to build a new stadium. This is still a pivotal time in the franchise of Kansas City baseball, because there's a lot happening that's not just this team this year on the field and what it's meant. Of course, that's nice. They haven't won in a long time. How much of that, though, impacts the larger future of the team? I would say a lot, like a whole lot. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They've still got to push the right buttons. But I think this year could be, if you look back 50 years from now and Kansas City baseball is doing its thing, this will have been such a crucial year for it. Imagine the alternative. Imagine another year of toiling in the mud. You know what I mean? Like, then what, right? So I love it. It was such a fun team this year. It was a flawed team, but it was a team that, you know, got the best of itself and was toe-to-toe in the postseason, just like we thought they could be a month into the year.
Yeah, and I think to your point, as far as feeling a sense of optimism for the future, I'm right there. And I think that it's a meaningful optimism because John Sherman put his money where his mouth was a year ago. You know, that they drew that organization, Sherman and Piccolo, drew a line in the sand in the offseason last year and said, this is not acceptable. We're not willing to just continue to languish. with this organization. So we're going to go out and we're going to do what we need to do to put the pieces together to be a competitive ball club. And they did that. They did that on the open market, and they brought in guys like Lugo and Waka. They were aggressive at the trade deadline. They were aggressive even on the waiver wire the final month of the season. Like, they never stopped toiling with this team and tinkering and figuring out what kinds of combinations they could do to lead to the most success possible. That, to me, doesn't strike me as a flash in the pan, like a catching lightning in the bottle one time, and then we'll just go back to the way that we've always done it. We're not going to spend on free agents. We're not going to invest in this team, in this organization. We're not going to try to make the farm system better. We're not going to try to draft well. We're not going to try to sign guys in free agency. We're not going to try to make trades to improve at positions and in the rotation and the bullpen. I think that what they did, not only this past offseason, but also throughout the year in trying to remain competitive, I think that's a sign of things to come. I think it shows that this team is willing to be aggressive as they can be. And remember a year ago, and I'm sure we'll have this conversation many times during the offseason. Remember a year ago, and even longer than that, when there was this big push by John Sherman to talk about a new stadium in the midst of the Royals losing big time. And we're like, dude, shut up. Like, nobody cares about this. The team is terrible. Do something about the team before you start talking about a new stadium. He did something about the team. He absolutely did. He deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. He hasn't gotten enough. We know that Piccolo's made a lot of brilliant moves. Can't do that if you don't have the ability to spend any money. You just can't. And Sherman has absolutely backed up what he said, deserves a ton of credit for it, and it's probably going to get him a new stadium one way or the other. So credit to him. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll tell you why I think this is sustainable, and we've talked about this before, but I'll give you a few more examples of why, you know, beyond notice, American League, I don't think this team is going anywhere anytime soon. We'll talk about that. The early look at what they can do this offseason to ensure that that happens. We'll have that. Your comments on the game. Before we go and on the way out, let's get a Royals message here from one of our great Royals fans all year long, Ken.
Good morning, fellas. Agree with Jacob. It was a great game last night, except for the result. My only comment in addition is that it's 110 days till pitchers and catchers report.
I like it. I like that attitude, Ken. You know, all but, you know, five teams have the same attitude. I don't know that we would have said that on October 11th of last year. Can't wait for pitchers and catchers, right? we were on to the Chiefs at that point. We're talking Royals in October. It's been fantastic. How do they keep it going? That's what we'll hit next. Man, we hope you've had fun with the Royals like we have. Let's set up one of our giveaways here. Let's give away some Wichita Thunder hockey tickets. Back the home opener against Kansas City, Friday, October 18th, a week from today. We want to hook you up with some tickets. To enter, just text the word THUNDER to the number 20357 for your chance to win a pair of tickets from KFH. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back. More Royals talk next. All right, welcome back, everybody, to Sports Daily. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Speaking of Crestview Country Club, where Adam Hadwin used to play at the Wichita Open. Might have been the AirCap Classic when he was playing in it. But Adam Hadwin will be on with us in our next segment. He and his wife to talk about a big event they have coming up here in not too long, a couple weeks. We can change. But Crestview's got 36 holes of golf. We tell you about the food all the time. Fridays are a great day to get out there. Have a cocktail, do whatever you want to do, a happy hour, get out there, check out the facilities, tell them we sent you at Sports Daily. All right, moving forward, Tommy, we've talked about it. I think it's sustainable. I think with Bobby Witt Jr. on a 13-year contract, Vinny Pasquantino's far from free agency, far enough, and Salvador Perez, I believe, will have a long career still. I think that he has a chance to be just a longtime DH for the Royals. Vinny Pasquantino is he hasn't even hit arbitration yet, just for instance. Neither has Cole Reagans. So if you look at those two of the cornerstone pieces, which of course we do, they're not even to arbitration. Brady Singer is not a free agent until 2027. Michael Wacha is not a free agent until 2026. Seth Lugo is not a free agent until 2027. Those contracts this offseason, which all year we talked about how frugal that was, and they've got this great pitching on it. Those were not one-year deals. Lugo has a player option before, but they will be able to bring all of those same players back on basically the same deal. Gets even more affordable, I'm sure, when we see what the market is for pitching in the offseason, Tommy. And so when you get to start there, when you get to start with basically four out of your five starters, and Marsh could make five, you start there, you've done your bullpen work at the trade deadline. Hunter Harvey was not a rental. Lucas Ersig was not a rental, I don't think. I need to look at Lucas Ersig's contract real quick. But that those moves that were made, Tommy, were not rentals either. And so, Ersig's not even to arbitration either. It took him a while to get to the big league. So their bullpen is largely in place. Their starting rotation is in place. The biggest bats in your lineup are set. The Royals get to attack this offseason to go find the most affordable things you can find in a baseball offseason. Bats. And they don't need to go make a big splash. I don't think they do, Tom. I don't know if you agree. They do need to go make a couple of moves. They probably need to get an outfielder at minimum, right? And then maybe a couple more veterans in there. But this thing looks like it's going to carry right over to me.
Yeah, they had, some patchwork players for sure, especially down the stretch because of injuries in that lineup. I mean, looking at guys like Gurriel and Tommy Pham and, other guys like that.
I don't think those old guys are coming
back.
Yeah,
you probably need to shore that up a little bit. And in fact, a lot of the impending free agents for this team are those veterans. You add in like Will Smith, he's a veteran. Robbie Grossman is a veteran. They're both free agents, going into the offseason. I think you've got to make a decision. Is there any desire to bring Michael Lorenzen back? He's going to be a free agent in the offseason. I don't know about that. I mean, I wonder if, and I kind of agree with you as far as like a big splash, but I think figuring out maybe the fifth spot in the rotation, the four main guys are solidified going into next year. But do you go and try to sign a free agent pitcher?
I don't think
so. Is it Daniel Lynch potentially that you roll with? Alec Marsh, do you try him again as the fifth starter? Do you go internal or do you try to figure out maybe somebody in the free agent market? But I do think that focusing a lot of your energy in the free agent market on depth in the lineup, I think is going to be extremely important. Especially you mentioned the outfield. I think that's the case. I kind of like overall the way that their infield is set up right now. I'm a fan of that for the most part. I mean, I like Massey. I like Pasquantino, obviously Bobby Witt Jr. You might maybe want to look at something at third base, although Michael Garcia, I think, was up and down this season. So I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with overall their infield. I do think if they're going to try to get some bats, they're going to need to look in the outfield.
I am perfectly okay upgrading at second or third. Either one would be
fine. I know
fine.
You're not high on Michael Massey.
Massey. No. I love Michael Massey. Michael Massey is awesome, has been awesome, always been a fan. But if there's an opportunity, then you can use Michael Massey somewhere besides second base. What I'm saying is, like, just if you've got an opportunity to get a second baseman that makes your offense better, don't let Michael Massey scare you. Utilize him somewhere else. He can play another position, right? Same thing at third base. Don't let having Michael Garcia stop you from upgrading the offense. That would be my attack to the offseason, because it's not like those guys aren't useful if you bring somebody else in. You just approach it. Some of the great teams over the years, and I think of the Rays, like you watch them and watch their games enough, and like they deploy different lineups every day. They've got guys that are in. Maybe these guys aren't playing. Kind of like a good example is the way the Royals used MJ Melendez this year. Honestly, like more of that. Situational. Quatraro has shown his chops this year at being able to tinker and do those things. You've got to find a leadoff hitter. That would be top priority for me, wherever that is. Don't care the position. Find somebody that can get on base ahead of your guys. And that would be my top priority, would be leadoff hitter, especially if Bobby Witt Jr. is totally opposed to being a leadoff hitter. which he was this year, maybe that continues, then that would be my top priority. But it's the thing about the team is, and the point of this is, and then we'll take a break and we'll bring on the Hadwins. I don't know that anything that we saw this year isn't something you would be optimistic carries right over into next year. The only thing I could think of is that if you starting pitching takes a step back, I just don't know why we would think that about any of these guys. They're
Lugo and Waka get a year older, so you do have to take that into consideration. Lugo pitched more innings than he ever has in the season. So, I mean, I do think that that could potentially be on the table. I think you need depth. You need depth in the lineup. I think you need depth in the rotation. But other than that, I feel extremely optimistic about the Royals next season.
Remember this about Lugo. Final thing for me. He's gotten better basically every year he's been allowed to be a starter. So every time he's been a starter, he's gotten better. I honestly think there is still more upside to Seth Lugo as a starting pitcher. He was fatigued this year. Now he knows he can do it. Next year, hopefully that fatigue doesn't set in as much, and he's more like he was first half of the year, Seth Lugo, for longer. I think his arrow's pointed up. I know he's older, but he hadn't been a starter for that long. His path is strange. So I'm super optimistic on the Royals. Futures bets now because I think they could get back. Man, I just realized I lost my bet, Tommy. I didn't even see what the cash out option was going into that series. I wouldn't have taken it anyway. All right, let's take a break. We're going to bring the Hadwin family in here, Adam Hadwin and his lovely wife. We're going to tell us about an event they have coming up. We'll catch up with Adam and in his year on tour, which I guess they're already golfing again, aren't they, Tommy? It's that golf season sneaks up on me too. We'll do that next. It's Sports Daily. We have football picks coming in hour number two. We'll give away some HTO in hour number two, and we'll get back to your calls and comments. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
Over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Jake Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. Jad Chambers producing. Working on getting connected with Adam and Jessica Hadwin, so bear with us on that as we get that sorted out. I do want to thank Prairie Fire Coffee for a great cup of coffee each and every morning here at KFH. Always love that. And tell you that, you can catch us anytime in the present or in the future. If you download the Odyssey app and just search Sports Daily, search KFH, and you can find the show. We put that out in podcasted form each and every time here on the program. So now that those things are out of the way, let's introduce Adam and Jessica Hadwin. I think we have you guys both here. How are you this morning? Welcome to Sports Daily. Adam and Jessica, do we have you? All right, we'll keep working on that connection there.
Can you guys?
Now we got it. Can you hear me? I think it's a service issue. So we'll try to reconnect. We'll try to find a better connection there and get that to you. Tommy, while we do that, why don't you set up the event that we have coming up for the Hadwin family, what it's all about and where it's at.
Yeah, it's called Tees for Tots. The Hadwin Family Foundation is a great organization here in town. And the event is coming up on October 27th. The whole event is to benefit their foundation that they've got basically supporting couples and families dealing with infertility, going through IVF, all of that to grow their family. And so it's going to be a fun event at Topgolf here in Wichita on October 27th. I know that they are, I know they're calling in, and so we're going to be connecting with them here shortly.
Yeah, so we'll get that connection, and that's a cool event, and I know one that it's been a really cool connection for you, Tommy, as you've, as you've gone through those things. You've been very open about that here on the family, but I believe we have the Hadwins now via the IHOP hotline. So Adam and Jessica, can you hear us now?
Yes, we can. Sorry about
that.
There
you go. How are you guys? No, big deal. This happens all the time. All right. So let's start with the event. We'll flip it upside down, and then Adam will talk to you a little bit about about the career and you guys' life in Wichita now, but Tommy just set up the event. Just give folks, you know, sort of an idea of why this is an event that exists now and why you guys are so passionate about it.
Yeah, so we have had our foundation up and running for about 4 years now and have been splitting time between Arizona and Kansas. I'm born and raised here, and we've been in Arizona quite a bit for Adam's career because, you know, perfect golf there. So we just recently decided to make a permanent move back to Wichita. Our daughter is going to be starting school and thought we should slow down on the nomad life for her. So we wanted to see how we could incorporate our foundation and fundraising and our events into the Wichita community easier and allow for more people to be involved. So last year we had our first Tees for Tot event at Topgolf. It was a ton of fun. More families and kids were able to come out. We were able to host the first Tee Kids to join us for the event. So we just wanted to do something more locally. And then specifically the reason behind Tees for Tots is to try to help families going through infertility or other roadblocks in their family building to grow their family. Adam and I had to go through IVF. We spent years battling the infertility journey that I know so many have, including Tommy and other people we've got to know here. So although it's maybe a smaller area that people don't think about, we wanted to do something where we can help support those families battling infertility. And through our fundraising, including Tees for Tots, we've actually had two babies born out of our IVF grant from funds raised at these events. So, yeah, that's kind of the why and the what, and we're happy to be able to do it.
Jessica, let's talk a little bit about the way that the foundation has grown over the years. And just, I know that obviously, you know, splitting time between Arizona and Kansas. Now, obviously, you know, you guys are permanently here in the Wichita area, but being able to take the foundation from the very beginning stages, growing it to now, I mean, you guys have been able to work with, you know, several different hospitals and different doctors and clinics and things like that to really grow the mission and be able to help multiple families. What has that been like for both of you to be able to watch this foundation grow from the beginning all the way to now?
Yeah, it's been super rewarding, and to see your efforts at fundraising and, you know, gathering the public support go all the way into a baby that's born. In fact, our first family that had a baby through the Maddie's Miracle Grant is flying in from Arizona to attend the Tees for Tots event here at Topgolf. So I think that's particularly special. But when we started out, we had one IVF grant a year at the clinic that Adam and I went to for IVF in Arizona. And we now have that grant in Arizona. We are starting a grant here in Wichita at the only IVF clinic in town, the Center for Reproductive Medicine. We have a genetic testing fund with KU Wichita Pediatrics. We're going on our third year now of annual support. And then outside of that, we have been able to support the Kansas Children's Foundation, the Ronald McDonald House. We've done Christmas baskets for the Wesley Children's Hospital. So, yeah, it started out really small and maybe is still on the smaller side, but definitely is having an impact specifically here in Kansas now as it grows.
Jessica and Adam Hadwin joining us. You can follow both of them on X. Jessica's messing with Adam a lot, which I appreciate. We all do. Adam, you're back here in Wichita. Now, you guys, Jessica, you mentioned you're from here. Adam, you're not. You're a Canuck, right up there from Canada. So tell us that, like, how did you end up here and how did you guys meet?
Yeah, I am a long way from home at this point in time, but simply put, I'm here because of Jessica. And we met back in 2014, actually, at the Corn Ferry Tour event at Crestview Country Club. We were a Tinder success story. I was in town for the week playing. I spent 3 years on the Corn Ferry Tour. It was the only year that I played the event in Wichita, and I ended up living here. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing just yet. We haven't gone through a winter here yet, so I'll let you know in a few months. But I love it here. You know, Jessica's got a big family. It's great to be around them during the off weeks. It's great for our daughter. And what I've come to learn so far is just a really good set of people here in Wichita. It's funny. I saw a post the other day on Instagram trying to describe what Wichita was like. And it's sort of this secret city, hidden gem here where, it's just a good Midwestern city with great people and lots to do. So I've enjoyed my time.
Adam, I was going to ask you about the winters, and I know that, you know, we're not in Minnesota, we're not in Canada, obviously, for some of the brutal winters, but it does get cold, it does snow, it does, you know, do all of that. This will be the first winter that you guys are in Kansas, not, you know, splitting time between Arizona and Kansas. What do you anticipate, you know, for the golf game and getting ready for the season, the spring flight, you know, of all the tournaments on the PGA Tour? What do you anticipate the winter being like now that you're going to be here in Kansas?
That's a very good question, and I am not sure what to expect just yet. I'm going to keep my mind open to any sort of possibility. Obviously, take advantage of any of those good days. I do remember we came back for Christmas last year, and it was, 63 degrees just before Christmas. So, take advantage of those good days when you get them. The other thing, luckily for us, is that, or for me anyways, is that I'm on the road most of the time starting January anyway. So to pop back during an off week and maybe take a rest from being on the road is probably not the worst thing in the world. So I expect to find a couple places to hit some balls during those off weeks indoors just to kind of stay sharp. But otherwise, just be at home, spend time with family, and be a dad.
We'll lie to you and tell you that it's always 63 degrees in the winter here. It never changes. It's good. Just like Arizona. Adam, let's talk about your year last year and then going into this year. It always sneaks up on us, the start of these seasons. Great year last year. We're on the outside, obviously, but looking at it, watching, it felt like last year you really hit a groove. Did you feel that way? And how do you carry that into this year?
Yeah, at points. For sure. I felt last year was, there was a lot of good and just a lot of bad to me. I felt like it was a very inconsistent year. Obviously had some great results in some big events. Starting off in LA, played well at Memorial there in the middle of summer. And just, I felt like I put myself in a really good position to get back to the Tour Championship and sort of make it a really good year. And I didn't pull it together there down the last couple months. And, that left me off the President's Cup team. And so while I set myself up for another good year this coming year, next year, getting back into the signature events is always a big thing. I can set my schedule. I definitely felt like I left some things on the table, which I guess we always do every year. So.
Adam, what does the fall look like for you? Are you playing in any of the tournaments in the fall swing of the PGA Tour, or is it primarily just getting ready to go for 2025?
I'm going to play next week in Vegas. Okay. I did that last year as well. It was the only event I played, and likely will be the only event I play again this year in the fall. Otherwise, just getting ready for next year, just enjoying the time off. I felt like my body really enjoyed the extra couple months last year, and so I'm going to take advantage of that again. Just enjoying being at home, enjoying this fall weather here, and just kind of hanging out before everything kind of kicks off in January, because we really do, once January starts, we're kind of January through August pretty full on. So
Tommy and I need to, we'll go out and hit balls. Tommy's a better golfer. I'm a better beer drinker, at least self-proclaimed. So we can go have some fun out there, and we can have fun at Topgolf too. So a cool thing about y'all's event is you're hitting balls with us there, correct? Adam, that's you're out there swinging away with the rest of us.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I got to do some meet and greets and some kind of wandering around, spend some time with the first tee kids, but I do a Beat the Pro kind of in the middle of the event. And we've changed it up a little bit this year. Last year we had people buy into it. This year we're going to select 10 or 15 people at random that are at the event to come over and take a swing against me. And if you beat me, we got some prizes for you. And just trying to hang out with as many people as possible. As Jessica mentioned, this is year four for us, I think, now, or going into year four next year. And I mean, it really has been incredible, the support that we have gotten. You know, when you start up something like this, and especially with, you know, infertility, it's not a very publicized, highly talked about subject. And so you never quite know what's going to transpire. And we've been very fortunate. A lot of people have come forward to tell us their story. And we've been very fortunate to just get some amazing support within the community. So really looking forward to seeing everybody again in a couple of weeks and hanging out with them.
Jessica, let's talk really quickly about the event and how people can be involved in it. I know you guys have some tickets left for people to come and watch everything, and you've been working really hard on the silent auction and a lot of the other cool things that you guys have going on at Topgolf this year. I know Jacob and I will both be there to take part in it, but just let everybody know about how they can be involved and what they can expect at Topgolf in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so we still have spectator tickets for adults, which essentially gets you the full food buffet, unlimited mini golf, the opportunity to get into the Beat the Pro raffle and go one-on-one against Adam, access to the silent auction, also access to a really awesome raffle prize that we have coming. So those are $50. We have a good handful of those still available for people that want to come. And then we also have tot tickets. It's essentially the same thing, but for kids, for $25 each. And the kids this year are going to have a costume contest that Adam will give the trophy to, and also some fun pumpkin decorating and mini golf. DJ for the Win is going to be there doing the beats for the party. So, yeah, the tickets we have left get you in the event and also a lot of goodies while you're there. And those can be purchased on our website, www.thehadwinfamilyfoundation.org. You can also find us on social media at @HadwinFamilyFoundation. And yeah, just reach out if you want to get a ticket to that and join in on the fun.
Adam, Jessica, we really appreciate it. We're looking forward to the event. Tommy and I will both be there. Tommy doesn't want that smoke. We'll come up with a wager between the two of us, because I can't keep up with him on the real golf course, but I might be able to at Topgolf.
Hey, if we're wagering who's going to have more shanks in the round, I think you're probably going to win that, buddy.
Yeah, we'll listen. I ain't scared. Adam's been coaching me silently for a while. Yeah, you didn't know that, but he has been giving me tips.
We can work on anything.
Okay. All right. It'll be fun. Get out there. There are tickets left. HadwinFamilyFoundation.com. Find them on social media. We love this event. Love that we've been able to make this connection. Adam, Jessica, we will see you guys soon. One more time on the date.
Yeah, it's October 27th, 1 to 4 p.m. at Topgolf in Wichita on Greenwich Road.
We will see you guys a few weeks from Sunday. Thanks for hopping on with us here on Sports Daily.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
There go Adam and Jessica Hadwin. Really cool event. Love that we have a Wichita now, Adam Hadwin, to follow on tour. That has always, to me, made the PGA Tour more fun when you just have somebody to follow on the event. Makes it a lot easier, if I think, for the casual golf fan. But really cool event coming up. That's going to be a lot of fun. We do need to come up with a side bet here, Tommy.
I should
never do that. I don't even need a handicap, I don't think.
Here's the reason.
Golf.
Can I tell you the reason why I don't know if we should make a wager? I mean, I think it'd be fun, but you still owe me golf beers from a wager that I won months ago, and you've never
cashed in golf. I owe you the beers the next time we play golf. What do you think the realistic chances that the two of us in our insanely chaotic lives find 4 hours at the same time to go play golf?
You know, it's funny because I don't think people who listen to this show frequently realize we rarely see each other in person. We're rarely around each other. Like, there was a point in time, like maybe the first year we did this show together, we maybe were around each other twice in person next to each other. It's better now. Like, I like you more now than I did then. So it's easier difficult to get together. So
it is. But I still owe you the beers. That doesn't change. We just have to play the golf. But we can come up with something to do. I don't know what yet. But we'll come up with something at Topgolf, because I might actually be able to keep up in that world, even without a handicap. But that event's coming up the 27th, the HadwinFamilyFoundation.com. Check it out. You can still get some tickets and come have some fun. We'll be there. We're both supporting the event. So join us. Come say hi and talk smack. We love it. All right. Coming up in the next segment, we will be talking smack, because we will be making football picks. Paul Savage is in. TJ Cleland is in. I think Brandon Zenner's in. We got his picks. Jad's got the receipts. which for a change have been something I'm looking forward to. I think. I don't even remember who I picked last week, but I think it was good. Jad will tell us. We'll make those picks. Second hour coming up here on Sports Daily. Stick with us. On the way out, let's have our other text to win contest, HTO, some free iced tea, some free iced and hot coffee. All you got to do is text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. That's TEA to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. They're good for any of the Wichita Metro locations. Good luck. We're coming back. Football picks next on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two of Sports Daily with you. You've got Jacob Albrecht, you've got Tommy Kester. We've also got Paul Savage, TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner on the show with us here. You've got the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. It's all there. You can watch us on our video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. We're ready to rock and roll. We're ready to party because we're ready to make Friday football picks. Jad, how do things stand here as we make our way into it?
Well, right now, things are looking interesting. I guess I'll put it that way. Jacob, of course, yeah, you've won 2 weeks in a row, so congratulations, Jacob.
Thank you.
You're still not in first place. All of you are behind Paul at the moment still.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, that's right, Paul, you're still...
What a shame.
Yeah, you're still leading there. But how this all breaks down right now is, Jacob, you are 19-15, Paul 23-11. That is all followed by TJ at 18-16, Tommy at 15-19, and Brandon at 12-22. So that's where we're at.
Right. Yikes. Here we go. 22. No problem. No problem. TJ Cleland, if you're watching us on the video stream, TJ's here. He's going to be voice only as he's driving right now. Safety first. All right, Jad, hit the music. Let's make some of these picks. No KU this weekend, no Chiefs this weekend, so we get maybe a little more variety around the country in these. And we start with a big one. It's no longer a big one in the Big 12, but it's still a big one. Red River Shootout, Red River Showdown, Texas-Oklahoma. Both teams are good this year. Both teams are ranked. Texas may be the best team in the country. Certainly look like they have been at least thus to this point. Brandon, give you a chance to make up some ground right out of the gates here. Oklahoma plus 14 in the neutral site game. What do you think?
Yeah, 14 is still not enough. I think this is going to be semi-low scoring compared to the shootouts of 70-plus points that we've seen of the past. I'm just not sure Oklahoma has enough to get past 14 points. I like a 31-10-ish win for Texas, so give me Texas in the points.
Paul, you're the leader. We'll jump around. We'll give you your roses here for about 1 second. All right, that's enough. What do you like in this game?
You know, I think the smart money, I think, in fact, I'm predicting I'm going to be on an island. And I don't know that I want to be on that island, but right now, you know, Texas is the obvious choice. Tommy's over here shaking his head. Yep, obvious choice. So, you know, when everything is so obvious, I think I'm going to take OU. It's not like OU doesn't have football players, fellas. It's not like this is a team that's devoid of talent. They've got a lot of talent. I'm going to go ahead and take Oklahoma because I smell upset, Tommy.
You smell full upset? You think Oklahoma wins the game?
What's been going on with the number one team in America? Things haven't been going along in cruise control for the number one teams of America.
I just want to point out that you mentioned the word smart, and that might be the first time that you've ever said smart on the show. when you're talking about smart money and where the smart money lands.
Yes, so Paul, are you forfeiting your 14 points? You're just taking Oklahoma on the money line? Is that what I heard?
No, I don't know about that. Not with you, knuckleheads. I think I'm going to go ahead and take my 14 points.
Okay. All right. TJ, what do you think on this one?
If this game's getting played in Norman, I probably would take OU, but the fact that this is pretty much halfway a Texas home game down there, wherever they, I don't even know, are they playing at Jerry World or are they playing at the Cotton Bowl?
Playing at Jerry World, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it is a Texas home game, pretty much. I'm definitely taking them to cover this one. I think that they're just a great team. I can't see that we're going to have three new number ones 3 weeks in a row. They're going to win this one handily.
Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a fairly easy pick for me, at least. I'm going to take Texas on here. I'm going to lay those points because this is an opportunity for the Longhorns to plant their flag as the best team in the country, the best team in the SEC, the fact that they are the better out of the two right now that left the Big 12 to go to the SEC. I like Texas here to flex a little bit. I like them winning by three touchdowns in this game.
So I like Texas. I think Texas wins this game, but I'll tell you this. One time in the last 11 years has this game been out. It has been within 14 points all but one time since 2013. I'm going to take the points. I think Texas wins, but I'm taking 14 points just because the history of this game is that it is a close game, and I think that can hold through on this one. I think it's a pretty difficult bet. I'm not betting that game, by the way. I don't like, but I'll take the points for the sake of these picks. All right, maybe the game of the week, some would say, Ohio State and Oregon. Look, we've had some dud weeks in college football. This ain't one of them. The three games we're going to pick, all three should be great games. Ohio State, Oregon, Oregon plus +3 at home. Paul, what do you like with this one?
You know something? I always like to rely on my eyes. Unfortunately, I haven't seen that much of Ohio State. I just haven't had the time or had the opportunity or the game that interested me. I have not laid my eyes upon Ohio State a whole lot, but I've seen Oregon. It seems like they're on all the time. I have seen them. They're pretty good. Although I know Ohio State's good too. But this game is in Oregon, and that's a unique place to go. It's a very interesting place. You know something? Oregon's getting three. Ohio State may win this game, but it's going to be a close game. I'm going to take the 3 points, and I'm going to take Oregon. Oregon may win this game, Tommy. Oregon could pop up and win this game.
Tommy, do you agree?
No, I don't. I think Ohio State wins this game. They've looked pretty dominant the last 2 weeks. I think that not only Ohio State wins, I think that they cover that number for sure. I think Ohio State wins by a touchdown. Keep in mind, the last couple of games, they've covered the spread by playing those conference games against Michigan State and Iowa, and they've looked pretty dominant while doing it. I like Oregon. I mean, Oregon's really, really good. Don't get me wrong. It's nothing against them. I just think Ohio State is better. I'm going to lay those points. Take the favorite. I think Ohio State wins.
Oregon is better than the two teams you just met.
No, they are. They are. Okay. Don't get me wrong. It's not a knock on Oregon. I just think Ohio State's that much better.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. Oregon beat Michigan State at home by 21. Ohio State beat Michigan State on the road by 31. I think I'm with you. The long trip, the true, you know, the road game, the points at home. I think I'm going to take Oregon here. I can't wait to see this game because I really want to see either one of these teams make a statement. I don't think either of them have really played anybody yet, so it's a hard one for me. They haven't played good teams, so I'm going to take the points at home. I'm going to take Oregon. TJ, what do you think?
I'm going to take Ohio State in this one. You know, they've looked apart in pretty much every game. I think that there was that one, you know, with Akron or whoever it was, kind of played them close there in that first half. But I do think that I see the Will Howard statement game in Oregon. It makes me a little weary because it is that cross-country conference game and everything like that, and things will get really weird. It's Pac-12 territory, but I think that Ohio State can make a statement this one too.
Not just that, it's a primetime game, Brandon. What do you think? We're split exactly 2-2 on this one. Break the tie.
Yeah, this is the one where I don't like picking last. I was hoping maybe to get an island or something, but I'm going to go ahead and take Ohio State. I just like what I've seen. I don't know how Paul hasn't seen them. They are on TV, it seems like, more than any
I know.
Certainly more than Oregon. But
yeah, I just haven't.
Buckeyes on the road.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him. I haven't sat and watched Will Howard play there. I'm actually looking forward to that. Seeing
he's played
him.
Pretty well.
I pay attention to their games. I follow along. But, yeah, we're watching Big 12 football in this house. All right. Speaking of Big 12 football, the prime time, well, the late night, I should say, showdown. K-State, they're laying 3.5 at Colorado. I can go first here. I actually love the number there. I love the over, but I do love the number. We're going to find out about Colorado right now. But if they're any sort of, you know, imposter, K-State will cover easily. So we'll see. I'm gonna lay the points. I know what happened last time in the mountains late night, but I'm going to lay the points. I'll take the Cats, lay 3.5. Tommy, what do you think?
I'm going to go the other direction. I'm going to take the 3.5. I do think that It's going to come down to a field goal, and I honestly think it could go either way. Kansas State is better from top to bottom. Well, maybe not at the very top, but overall, collectively, Kansas State is a better football team than Colorado is. Colorado's top-heavy, as we know, but, you know, the environment. We know the last time Kansas State went on the road to the Mountain time zone, played a late-night game. It was not good for them against BYU. They're not going to have that kind of outing, I don't think. Klieman will get them ready to go to avoid a repeat of what happened at BYU a few weeks ago. But that being said, I do think that Colorado's going to get up for this game. And I'm not really a Colorado believer, but this is a premier game for the Buffaloes and for Coach Prime. I think Shedeur Sanders will show out some. It's going to come down to a field goal. I think the Wildcats will win, but I'm going to take the 3.5. I think it's going to come down to that last second field goal.
It's probably, at least off the top of my head, the biggest opportunity for Prime in reality. They had big games last year, but the reality is they weren't going to win any of those. This is probably their biggest chance, TJ, to get one of those. Which side of this are you on?
First of all, I'm going to assume that by top down, Tommy was referring to the coaching staff is the top, is what he's talking, complimenting there.
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna pick Colorado in this one. I think this is going to be a real sweat fest. I think this could probably be one of the best games of the entire weekend. But looking at the K-State defense, kind of how they fared against Tulane, what BYU did to them, even Oklahoma State threw the heck out of the ball against them. I could see Shedeur Sanders having, you know, upwards of 400 yards in this game, kind of picking apart the K-State secondary. They're going to battle back and forth, but I think it is going to be like a field goal game. So I'm going to pick Colorado.
Paul, I actually think the way to beat K-State is to run the ball, not to throw the ball. I think they want teams to throw the ball on them. Paul, you're in the trenches. What do you, because I think we'd all agree it's K-State in the trenches. Are you sticking with the big fellas, or where are you picking this one?
Well, you know something, I'm going a lot with bedtimes. You know, what time do you normally go to bed? 9:15 is pretty late for most K-State people. Pretty late. You know, and this is a 9:15 start time. I think a lot of these players will be tired because it's past their bedtime. I'm going to go ahead and take Colorado just as well. I think bedtime is a big story in this.
That's the headline is bedtime. That's what everybody's
Paul
focused on.
Paul is confusing his own bedtime with the bedtimes of 15-year-olds. Listen, if you guys are getting, Brandon, you going to give me this island here right now with K-State?
Coming off a bye week? Absolutely not, Jacob. Chris Klieman, after the bye week, it didn't do him any good last year at Oklahoma State. But I think they kind of had a chance to go back to the drawing board. I think they are going to come out and try to use those trenches to their ability. They're going to try to run the ball with DJ Giddens. And maybe we see a big special teams play. We know that Paul loves this K-State special teams. It worked for them early in the early weeks. We haven't seen it the last couple. I think they're going to be able to make something happen there. Give me the Cats, and speaking of bedtimes, I guess we'll find out Sunday morning who wins this one. I'm probably not going to be up at 1 o'clock in the morning to catch the end of this one.
You know, I'm not going to make it through, Tommy. You know, I'm
not
will.
Even gonna, you're not going to make it to kickoff, I don't think.
9:15 is pretty rough.
When you eat dinner at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you're gonna be fast asleep by 9:15.
Well, usually 3:30. Are you kidding? 4 o'clock? That's a little late for me.
Get that early bird special.
Listen, I'm an advocate actually of dinner in the fours. I think it's underrated. It just leaves open the opportunity for a late night snack.
There you go.
Let's make some NFL picks here. Commanders, Ravens. Ravens are 6.5-point favorites at home. TJ, will let you start this one. Are you a believer in the Commanders or not? Because you got an opportunity to hear to prove it.
I don't think I'm a believer in the Commanders. You know, they really impressed everybody on that one Monday Night Football game, seeing what Jaden Daniels can do. But I think that was just a little bit of a hype train for a little bit. I think it's slowing down. And as we've said, every single week, we think that the Ravens are probably one of the best teams in football. Seeing what that rushing attack can do, I think they'll take this one over the Commanders.
Brandon, you agree?
I am a believer in the Commanders, but not enough to get me off the train of the Ravens. I do think they are the best team in football, despite the Vikings being 5-0 on a bye week. But yeah, just give me Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, averaging over 6 yards a play. It's ridiculous. They're going to keep it going against Washington in cover.
Paul, do you think Jaden Daniels can do it against a defense like this?
I can see the future, and I can see an island with Washington. I I remember when we were having conversations about the draft, what, about 9 months ago, we were having these conversations. And, you know, we were always talking about who we thought would make the best quarterback. I consistently said Jaden Daniels was going to be that one guy. And I think I'm right. He's got all the tools. Can he do it? I don't know. But I can predict the future. Tommy's going to take Baltimore. You're going to, Jacob, you're going to take Baltimore. I'm taking Washington because 6.5 points. I'd like it if it was 7. I'd love it if it was 7. But I'm going to go ahead and take Washington to cover this and maybe even win the game based upon the footwork and the arm of Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I think the arm, I'm with you, Paul, and I'm not going to give you the island because I'm going to take Washington. And I do think it's the arm of Jaden Daniels in this one.
Dang.
The Ravens are gettable over the top. The Ravens are gettable over the top, and they've been doing that with Terry McLaurin. It's too many points for me. I don't know if they'll win the game.
Right.
But this year in the NFL, big lines like that, it's been going to the underdog. And with a playmaker like that, even if they get beat up on early, this may be a backdoor cover. I'm going to take the 6.5 points. Tommy?
Well, I think people are still, you know, considering the Commanders kind of that fraudulent franchise, but they've got new ownership. They've got, obviously, Dan Quinn. Jaden Daniels, I think, is the real deal, and I think that he's solidifying himself. They're really good, and they're going to continue to get better and improve as time goes on. That being said, they're running up against a buzzsaw in the Ravens. This line, in my opinion, could be double digits, and I would still lay the points. I'm going to take Baltimore. I think that they win. I think they win by 2 touchdowns. It doesn't take anything away from Washington. I really like them a lot. I'm going to take Baltimore, though, at home.
Lions at Cowboys. Cowboys are 3-point home dogs. It feels like it's been 2 decades since we could say the Cowboys were ever 3-point home dogs, Brandon. You buying that at all? You taking the Lions here, or is that a little fishy to you?
I'm just going to take the Cowboys, trying to will another game. We good, TJ? Hello.
Sorry about that.
Just trying to will the Vikings into yet another half game lead over the Lions in the NFC North. So for that sole reason, I am taking the Cowboys.
Tommy, which side of this? I love this game, by the way, but which side are you on?
Yeah, I think that Dallas will cover the number. I mean, obviously at 3, you've kind of got that little bit of question mark about, you know, if it's a field goal, you push, whatever. So the margin is obviously quite a bit smaller. But I do think at home, I'm going to reluctantly take the Cowboys, and I'll take those points. As much as I do like Detroit, and I think that they are obviously a really good team, Dallas hasn't put it together quite yet. And I think that they will in a better way this week against the Lions. So I will take those points. I'm going to take the 3. I think the Cowboys can get that done.
I the Lions are coming off the bye. The Lions have revenge on the mind. The Cowboys are very banged up. And Justin Fields missed some plays in that Steelers game that Jared Goff's not going to miss. I'm going to take the Lions. My wallet will just bet the over on this, by the way. I'm not betting the line. I'll bet the over. But it's crazy for me to think about the Cowboys as home dogs like this. But I guess I'll fall for it. I'm going to take the Lions and lay the 3 points. Paul, what do you think?
Well, I just want to know which defense will show up for the Cowboys. The one that seems to be soft on occasions, or the one that flies around, makes plays, and does what it needs to do. Which defense will it be? I don't know. But I have a lot of confidence in the solid football team that is the Detroit Lions. Not fancy. It's not one of those high flyers. But it'll grind you out. It'll wear you down. Little hard-nosed football. I believe that Detroit controls the line of scrimmage. And anytime I believe that, I've got to take the team that I think is going to control the line of scrimmage. And that's Detroit. I'm taking Detroit.
Got one of the best pass rushers in football this year in Hutchinson, too. TJ, you giving the Cowboys any opportunity here?
I think that I took the Cowboys too much early on this season. I had my heart broken too many times by them and my wallet broken by them too many times. So just going to keep fading the Cowboys. Like you said, Jacob, coming off the bye week, the Lions, you know, I think that they are a really good team. They slipped a little bit. This could be a big one for them. I'm going to take the points. I'd tease it up to a touchdown on this one even.
I'm going to check this next one because I think I wrote it down backwards. We're going to pick the Cardinals and the Packers, fellas. But I got a weird line on this. So here's the line we're going to pick. Everybody ready for this?
Yeah.
Packers minus five. Packers minus five.
Okay.
I wrote that down wrong in our in our text this morning.
Packers
so we got Cardinals
five.
At Packers. Packers minus five. Tommy, what do you like in that one?
I really like the Packers in this game. It's nothing. Well, I guess it is a little bit against the Cardinals. I just don't think that they've got what it takes to be able to cover that number on the road in Green Bay. I don't know. I understand that Kyler is kind of starting to get things figured out with Marvin Harrison to an extent, and they've got, you know, some other weapons too. But I like Jordan Love too much. I like what the Packers have going on. I'm going to lay those points and take Green Bay.
They're at home, TJ, but 5 points this year that's a lot of points. The Packers have played, I think, three games within five. What do you think in this game?
Yeah, I'm just going to throw the Hail Mary out here and pick the Cardinals. You know, I don't really have a good reason to pick the Cardinals. I think Kyler Murray and Marv are super talented. But like you said, every single game in the NFL is close. It feels like five is the new 7.5, betting lines and everything like that. So hope I get an island if anybody else is crazy enough to take the Cardinals with me. So I'll take the Cardinals.
Brandon?
Yeah, no real reasoning. The Cardinals, I just feel like this one is going to be close enough, 28-24. It's going to be somewhere in there that's good enough to give me a cover. Go ahead and give me the Cardinals.
Paul, where are you at on this one?
I can't believe you got two guys that are supposed to know something about sports taking the Cardinals. This is incredible to me.
They just beat the Niners.
And you guys call it. Listen, how good's quarterback going to be? We don't know. Sometimes we just don't know with the Arizona Cardinals. But we saw enough last week. I saw enough Green Bay football to understand this is a good, hard-nosed football team. Jaden Love is starting to come along. I mean,
Jordan Love.
Jordan Love. Well, him too. Both of those guys are coming along. They're both coming along. Anyway, they're both coming along. Listen, I'm going to go ahead and take the Green Bay Packers. Why not? I think it's a home game, and Lambeau is not the easiest place to play in the world, particularly if we get a blizzard blowing through this weekend.
It's October, Paul.
Yeah, okay, I know that.
There's a matchup here that's good. I've seen that Green Bay Light is one of the teams this year. There are not many that'll play single high safety. That means Marv's going to get a chance at some one-on-ones. I'm going to take the. I don't. 5 points. I just think they can keep it within five. I don't think I like them to win, but I think they can keep it within five. I think it's a really nice matchup for Marvin Harrison. And I remember the game where he had two massive plays against defenses like that. It was like the second game of the year where he just went over the top to him. I think they're going to give him a few chances in this game, maybe more than he has been getting in the last few weeks. So I'll take the Cardinals as well. That's our picks. I'd wish you all good luck with them, but I would not mean it. But enjoy the Friday there, Brandon. Doesn't look like you're on the golf course today. I know you guys have been traveling with the Royals, but that's the way it is. Disappointed. What a bummer last night.
Yeah.
What a bummer last night.
Oh, it was.
All right, that's the picks. TJ's going to stick around. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little high school football here. Catch It Kansas Friday as well. No rest for the weary. And we'll do it next. Don't go away. Sports Daily coming right back. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's a Friday. Yay day, as my kids would say at school. It's a Friday and it's a party. It's a bummer today because the Royals fall, but we're making our way through it anyway. And it is a Catch It Kansas Friday, which is always room for celebration. It is a Catch It Kansas Friday, and we keep TJ Cleland here, of course, running things over at 12 News. The Catch It Kansas staff, rocking and rolling. We got Paul out there coaching at Wichita East. We love high school football here on Sports Daily. And TJ, when we look at week six, I mean, it's the easiest week to know where the attention lies because it's the Holy War, and it doesn't matter whatever else is happening. The Holy War brings added attention.
Yeah, it's always an awesome game, you know, especially with the history, the recent history of this game. You know, they've played it at so many different sites. I know they played it at Cessna a couple of years ago. I think that the last 2 years they've played it at the baseball field downtown. This time, I think it should be a true home game for Bishop Carroll. It's going back to the campus for the first time in a couple of years, I believe. So we'll be really exciting to see all that. And it always brings everybody out. That's probably one of the most attended high school football games in the area every single year. So going to be interesting on the field. I know that a lot of people are ranking Capen the number one team in Class 4A now that Andover Central lost last week. So they've really come out and proven that they're more than the guys that they had last year and graduated. They're going to be another great team this year. Carroll slipped a little bit, lost some games they don't usually characteristically lose. So it would be a big statement for Carroll if they can knock off the rival tonight, obviously.
TJ, there were a couple of upsets last week that I think were notable that stood out, including basically the city of Goddard taking down the city of Andover. You had both Eisenhower beating Andover, and then you had Goddard beating Andover Central. I know moving forward, those are a couple of games that, you know, could basically set the direction of both the Goddard teams and both the Andover teams. What do you take away from those and where they move forward after that?
Absolutely. You know, that Eisenhower-Andover game, you know, I was kind of talking to you guys about it last week. Those were kind of two 180 stories of teams that were kind of in recent history not very good. And then this year, they're pretty good. Andover, you know, keeping it a ball game against Eisenhower is just tells you how good Andover is. Eisenhower had to sneak out a last couple-minute touchdown to win that game. It was a really good one. I think those teams are both going to be people that you'll see in Class 5A in the playoffs winning a couple of games. So a lot of talent between those. It's an awesome story to follow there. As for the other one, Goddard beating Andover Central, that's probably the upset of the state last week. You know, Goddard, nobody knew how good they were going to be. Their entire team last year, it felt like, was Micah Johnson, who's a running back at KU this year. They run that veer every single play, and they do it so well. They run the ball so well. And it worked against Andover Central, who I know that at least Brandon and I regarded as probably one of the top five teams in Wichita, even in Class 4A. They had so much talent. So it says a lot about Goddard. Will be really interesting of how Andover Central can respond this week. They got a good Salina Central tonight. We'll be at that one. That'll be a good one.
You know, having perused a few of the top teams in every classification this past week, you know, it struck me that how few Central Kansas and Western Kansas teams are ranked in the top 10. You know, there's a lot of schools back east that are ranked in the top 10. Now, Derby, I think for the most part, is everybody's choice right now as the number one team in the state of Kansas, at least in 6A. But, man, oh, man, there's a lot of teams I don't know anything about. Would you give me a breakdown on what I need to watch when it comes to teams on the east part of this state? Because I'm just not familiar with them, other than the fact we played an undefeated team in Highland Park, Topeka, last week. I'm not familiar at all with what's going on the east side of this state.
Yeah, you know, it feels like it's kind of the story every single year because there's just so many schools that are there. It always cracks me up the way that they split the East and the West substates, that Manhattan is a team in, you know, 6A West. That's how many teams are over on the East side in those upper classes. You know, Gardner-Enderton is going to be one of the best teams in the state there in Class 6A. This team that won the state championship over Derby last year. Just because I've been talking to Mick Schaefer and a lot of Kansas City people this week, big game between Gardner-Enderton and Mill Valley tonight, who's the best team in 5A, and will be until proven otherwise. They win it every single year. So those are the two best teams in the state, probably, in that area. I think that Derby's still probably the best team in the state, in my opinion. I would, you know, wager to bet that they're not going to lose a game this year. If they do, it will be to Gardner-Enderton, but I think that they're a better team. Just maybe that's biased because I've seen them so many times. But obviously a lot of talent over on the east side, Bishop Miege. You know, there's always the classical powers every single year, and there's always just surprise teams around there. So always awesome in my eyes because I live in Wichita and cover all these kids whenever they can pull off the maybe upset of some of these Kansas City teams because they have so much talent up there. But, you know, I think that the Wichita schools, you know, I think Great Bend is a team. You know, Dodge City is really good this year in 6A. They can really go toe-to-toe with any of those guys still.
What's your favorite small school matchup of the day, TJ?
Oh, great question. I don't know if this technically counts as small school, but I'm going to throw this one out here. I got a couple for you. You know, contender for game of the week, and this is a great one as well. Winfield and Wellington tonight. I think it's a Class 3A matchup. Wellington, we love Wellington. Dusty Bannister, the quarterback, leading the state in passing yards. I think their wide receiver second in the state in receiving yards. I was telling somebody about this game. They can throw the ball with anybody. They run like a Texas Tech air raid offense. They will throw it 60 yards down the field every single play if you let them. That's a really fun one. Conway Springs is going to take on Sterling tonight. Conway Springs is, you know, proven that they're the best team in Class 1A. They can do everything so well down there. They run the single wing, I think, or something wing. Who cares? They, you know, they run the ball. You get the point. And then Kingman Garden Plain. Another really fun one tonight there as well. Garden Plain's a team that, you know, went to the wire with a lot of really good teams. Tough one tonight. Kingman with the state championship just one year ago. I can't even remember, but definitely some small school powers there.
TJ, I know that we talked a little bit about the Holy War at the very beginning of the segment. Another big-time rivalry in 5A tonight, Mays and Mays South. So you've got that matchup. And these are two teams that, you know, obviously have been, they have kind of gone different directions, at least in the last couple of years. Anything stand out to you in that particular rivalry matchup?
First of all, I'm getting used to it because Mays is actually a 6A now with new classification.
Yeah, good point.
So
yeah.
Technically a 6A, 5A matchup, just to correct you. But going to be an interesting one. You know, Mays has slipped. They won their, I think they won their first game last week in their homecoming. They took down campus, scored a ton of points. And because there's just so much talent on that Mays team, and they're just kind of missing the gel to get it all together. I keep telling everybody they have, you know, upwards of 10 guys that are going to be playing college football. They just can't figure out the right pieces to go out. Because, and the other part of it is they're playing a bunch of teams that are really good. They always have one of the best schedules in the city of Wichita. Mays South, I think, is a team that, you know, is probably up there in the top five as well, like we said. I think that just to look ahead, next week they play Derby. That's going to be one of the best games that we're probably going to see in the city all year long. So Mays South's awesome. Tate McNew, he lost a lot of his receivers last year to go play Division I football, if that tells you anything how good they were last year. But they returned a lot of guys. Hunter Higgins, the defensive lineman for Mays South, is an offer from pretty much the entire Power Four, it feels like. So there's going to be a lot of talent on the field, a lot of Division I talent. And it's always just fun. I think that's what's the battle of 266 or something like that, USD 266 out in Mays. So we'll be at that one for sure.
You know, one game we do have to mention, two top 10 teams in most of the polls throughout the state of Kansas is Northwest and Manhattan. Listen, that may be one of the more physical football games in the state of Kansas, if you know what I mean, in the trenches. This is going to be a battle with two teams that are physical. That's going to be a fun game to watch.
Absolutely. That would probably have been our game of the week if Brandon and I haven't been driving around the entire city of Kansas City the last week. That's going to be a really fun one there in Manhattan. That's just a matchup that we've seen Manhattan play, you know, Northwest, play Derby, play, you know, these 6A schools that are around. I think they played, I don't know if they played East a couple years ago or something like that, but it seems like they're always matching up because they are a 6A West team. And it's going to be a really good one. You know, Northwest probably has the toughest schedule that I've seen on paper that doesn't stop to tonight. If they can win this one, I don't think Northwest has lost yet, if I'm not mistaken. This would be a big statement to prove to that side, I guess, of 6A West. The Northwest might be a team to beat right there with Derby.
There it is. Catch it, Kansas. It's a big Friday coming up. TJ's laid it out nicely. You can also watch the pregame show right here on 12 News Connected if you're watching us, so make sure you tune in for that. You've, of course, got the Catch It Kansas show late night tonight with all your highlights and scores and game stories. Brandon, TJ, Rachel Hallam joins them for that full production. So do that. And always, catchitkansas.com, keeping you apprised. There's a scoreboard there so you can keep up with everything happening. Scores from Wichita East straight from Paul Savage. It's
there
great.
You go.
And all over the state. It's a Catch It Kansas Friday. TJ, we appreciate it. Catch your breath from the Royals and get ready for a wild and crazy Friday night.
Absolutely. Can't wait to go shower off that Royals loss last night and get into high school mode when I get home here.
Yeah, it didn't end up being a champagne shower, unfortunately, in Kansas City there. Let's come back and we'll get back into it, Royals fans. The IHOP hotline is back open for you now at 869-1240. You can vent, you can celebrate, you can be angry, whatever it is you want to do, Royals fans. It's yours the rest of the way. We'll come back. We'll talk about last night's game when we return on Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in here. Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. Jad Chambers producing for us. We'll be missing Jad for a week next week. Jad, just do us a favor. Don't think about us the entire time that you're out.
Way ahead of you.
Take some time. Well, that's a pretty quick answer.
See,
there.
That was sure. Awfully quick.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that. 869-1240, though, is the number to call. You can leave your comments on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, 12 News Connected. And you can also leave us your voice messages. The Royals are bounced in the ALDS. Four competitive, highly contested games. Couple of key moments. The Yankees had more of those key moments offensively. Be honest, Tommy. When Kyle Isbell hit that ball, did you think it was leaving the yard?
No, I didn't. I didn't either.
He hit it. And then it was like, wait, this might go.
No, because I knew the wind was blowing in, and I know that Kauffman is hard to hit home runs in. And that was the storyline the entire game was, if that was in Yankee Stadium, that would have been a home run. Right. There were a couple of them that were like that, but the wind was blowing in. And Isbell's not the kind of guy that I look at like, oh, he's going to be able to drive one out of there, even in a normal circumstance. So no, I never thought it was leaving the yard.
Paul, Tommy and I talked about this in the first hour. The feeling of what comes next is highly optimistic. I don't know if you've thought about this yet, but does this seem like a flash in the pan to you, or are you with us that this is sustainable and it looks like the Royals are finally back to being a good team again?
You still have Bobby Witt? I think we still have Bobby Witt. So I guess my answer would be, yeah, you've really got something to build around. I mean, I feel like I should use the name George Brett, but I'm not sure that I can. I don't think I will. But I mean, I get the feeling that, you know, it's not often, it's almost generational. You have that one guy you can build around. And I think Bobby Witt Jr. is that one guy. And when you have that to build around, and I know Salvi's getting up there in age, but he gives you a lot right now. But I like their future. Partly because they have somebody who's a team leader, who's really a good player. I like the Royals, and I'm buying into the fact that I think they could be this good, if not better, next year.
I agree with that. We haven't talked about that, Tommy. What are the chances that they're better? What are the chances they have a better season than they did this year? We think the roster can get better, right? We think that, but can the results get better? Can they get to 95 wins in a regular season, that kind of number?
If I knew that there were players that were in the system that were knocking on the door to be ready to come in and be franchise players, then yeah, I'm not ready to commit to that right this second, because it's going to be largely dependent on what they do during the offseason with free agency. That's really going to be the path in the short term for Kansas City. And it doesn't mean that they can't. And they did it a year ago, and I think that John Sherman is willing to open up the pocketbook to be able to go and do that. But if there was a pipeline of players that you saw promise from that came in midway through the season, and then you think, okay, well, they're going to be able to take a step forward next year, it'd be easier for me to say, yeah, they'll be a better team next season than they were this year. But I can't commit to that right now. I think at the very least, we'll probably be seeing about the same kind of team that we saw this year. I don't think they'll regress. I have a hard time believing that they will regress. I just can't commit to another step forward until I know what those free agent pieces look like.
Well, that's something. That's something. That's good. That's something.
Yeah, it's hard because you've got to think about it this way. And I agree. Salvador Perez will be a year older. What does that look like? Your pitching all came together at the same time. If any piece of that doesn't, then that would be a reason. The other thing is Bobby Witt Jr. always going to be a 330 hitter? You know, I didn't think he was that kind of a, you know, four average hitter. So maybe he is, but maybe he's not. Maybe the power continues to develop and he's not. So I think there's a lot of reasons to think that. And that's why the pressure is on this front office to make those guys not have to carry the load quite as much, right? Get a little more offense throughout the lineup. And how they do that will be really interesting. I would tell you this, Royals fans, what I don't think will happen is that they'll like explode into this offseason and be one of the first teams to go sign a big bat. I think it will be an offseason of patience. I think they will let let things fall, see where things land, and be ready to pounce on guys who didn't get that big contract maybe they wanted. Basically, take the same path they took with Lugo and Waka. Just let everybody go out and go after the big tickets, and then let's just see what's out there. And I think that's the right way to go about it, too. I mean, I'm never going to get mad if they go spend a bunch of money and bring somebody in. I don't think that's what they'll do, and I don't think that's what they need to do. I think standing pat and, you know, bringing in veteran bats, taking a few switches, just like they did with Renfro and, you know, a couple of the other names they brought in offensively, just more of those kinds of moves. I don't think they'll be in the market, Tommy, for young hitters who are really good, who are hitting free agency. That doesn't seem frugal to me. That doesn't seem like the right path. They did that with Bobby Witt Jr. They put their money where their mouth was on that. They're going to have to get it done on a budget. But I think if you're going to be on a budget, going to find veteran bats is the best way to be on a budget. What you don't want to do is look for pitching. They solved that last year.
They did. For the most part, I mean, you can always have more bullpen arms, and I know that the bullpen was more of a trade deadline type thing, but you are more than likely losing a guy like Will Smith, which he didn't really do much of significance. He was expected to be more significant this season, so he is a pending free agent, and they're not going to bring him back. So there are going to be a couple of other pieces in the bullpen that I think that you would like to have more stability there. Urcig is great, and Bubich is good, and you've got to, you know, all of that is in place, but I don't know if you feel super confident going into next season about the overall makeup of your bullpen. And so knowing that, and keep in mind, Hunter Harvey barely pitched for them, and right. We don't know really what his ceiling is and really what the, you know, long-term plans for Hunter Harvey will be. I think they should probably shore that up too in the offseason. I don't think that they should piecemeal together a bullpen outside of Urcig and Bubich and I guess Harvey and call it good going into the season and then try to make it up at the trade deadline if it doesn't work out. I'd like to see them acquire at least one or two more bullpen arms on top of, you know, the bat situation and things like that that they're going to need to do during the offseason.
I'm going to just give you a list of their free agents. Paul DeJong, Robbie Grossman, Gurriel, Hampson is, which is interesting. Michael Lorenzen and Will Smith, Tommy, are the only guys who are in that bullpen, and Will Smith can go. Michael Lorenzen's probably going to get a big deal. I think with Bubich emerging there, if Harvey's there and Urcig, that probably is what you envision as your final three in whatever order. And then it's guys like Zerpa, Long, Schreiber, who when they got healthy were really effective. So, I mean, I'm not going to complain if they bring in another bullpen arm. But I do think what we saw late in the year, just by, you know, the players, is a little bit sustainable, I think. The problem with bullpens is they're always weird and hard. Now, I've been saying Waka is back. When is his player option? I'm going to look at this because 25, he has a player option. So his player option is this offseason. That is something to pay attention to as we've talked about this. He's at $16 million. His player option will be at $16 million again next year. I got to imagine there's a bigger market for him than that, maybe. So you might be losing Waka here in his player option. That'll be an interesting one to watch if he activates that. I mean, if you were a team with a big bankroll, wouldn't you pay more than $16 million for Michael Waka at this point, Tommy?
that's a little bit too rich for my blood.
With the way that the pitching market has been in free agency?
Yeah, but I mean, keep in mind, you're talking about he's penciled in as what, the number three starter right mm-hmm. now. Yep. You know, if he was one or two, I mean, they signed him along with Lugo. In fact, I thought going into the year that Waka, outside of Cole Reagans, would probably be their ace. I thought it was going to be more likely Waka than Lugo. That didn't really pan out that way. Yep. I don't know if I'm necessarily willing to.
He had almost an identical year to last year, and last year this is what he was worth. So maybe that doesn't change, but I think the reason they got him for 16 was because people didn't think he would replicate. And, you know, and he's had some injuries in his past, but seriously, almost an identical year. And really it's an almost an identical 3 years in a row. And he's been right there, you know, low threes ERA, good whip. He's given you innings. If I'm Waka's agent and he doesn't just like, you know, isn't like, no, I'm never leaving, I loved it too much, I would test the market. I think, if I were him. So we'll watch that. So that may be one hole in the rotation they've got to fill. And then Lorenzen's free agency, because you could always ask him to come back too. But a lot of things, we have a lot of time to talk about it. It's the day after the season. Here's the good news, and I think why it's important, because I think everybody's optimistic, right? It doesn't feel like, oh my God, they'll never get back again. It's been a long time since they got there. Maybe they can come right back next year. All right, that's it, Royals fans. We'll talk more about the Royals next week, I'm sure. We'll watch free agency closely. We'll keep wishing they were continuing to play in the Major League Baseball postseason, but they're not. They lost to the Yankees, and that ends what's been an incredible year. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network this weekend when we wrap up Sports Daily right after this.